Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts with a look at California agricultural news.
Early registration for the 2024 Crop Consultant Conference, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors, is now open. The popular event for certified crop advisors, pest control advisors, grower applicators, and industry professionals is the mainstay for all continuing education needs this year and will take place on September 25th and 26th at the Visalia Convention Center. Visit myaglife.com/events for the early discounted rate of $275 per person, which includes the live conference, a trade show with 70-plus exhibits, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. We'll see you there.
According to the California Final Grape Crush Report, the 2023 crush totaled 3,899,710 tons, up 6.2% from the 2022 crush of 3,670,861 tons. Red wine varieties accounted for the largest share of all grapes crushed at 1,970,643 tons, up 3% from 2022. White wine varieties crushed totaled 1,714,268 tons, up 15.6% from 2022. Tons crushed of raisin type varieties totaled 48,910, down 54% from 2022. And tons crushed of table grape varieties totaled 165,889, down 1.1% from 2022. The grape crush report includes a total number of tons crushed for concentrate production. In determining grape tonnage crushed for concentrate production, each processor was required to report the estimated equivalent tons of grapes crushed for grape concentrate. For the 2023 season, this total was 445,448 tons, up 11.4% from the 2023 grape crush total. This report provides only aggregate figures for grapes crushed for concentrate production and does not include information by district type or variety. The 2023 average price of all varieties was $1,036.72, up 11.2% from 2022. Average prices for the 2023 crop by type were as follows. Red wine grapes were at $1,343.44, up 13.3% from 2022. White wine grapes at $731.40 was up 6.1% from 2022. Raisin grapes at $288.09 was down 6.9% from 2022. And table grapes at $194.36 was down 9.2% from 2022. The Port of Oakland is reporting that its January container volume continued to increase, a trend that was first seen in 2023. In January, full imports increased 8.2%, with the seaport handling 72,081 TEUs, or 20-foot containers, in January 2024 versus 66,637 TEUs in January 2023. Meanwhile, full exports saw an increase of 9.3%, with 62,596 TEUs transiting the seaport in January of 2024. That compares to 57,279 TEUs in January of 2023. Empty imports declined 1.1%, with 17,117 TEUs passing through the port facilities in January of 2024, in contrast to 17,299 in January of 2023. Empty exports also dropped 24.5%, with the seaport handling 28,694 TEUs in January of 2024, compared to 38,014 in January of 2023. In January 2023 overall, an estimated 15 to 20% of the volume in TEUs were commodities for consumption. On exports for the same year, an estimated 50 to 55% of the volume in TEUs were commodities for consumption. In fresh produce imports, this includes bananas, pineapples, citruses, peaches, pears, cherries, apricots, strawberries, sweet corn, asparagus, and pears. In fresh produce exports, it includes nuts, citruses, and grapes. Mission Produce Incorporated has announced the appointment of John Pawlowski to President and Chief Operating Officer effective April 1st. Steve Bernard will continue to serve as Mission Produce's Chief Executive Officer and a member of the Board of Directors. Pawlowski is a highly accomplished executive leader joining Mission with more than 25 years in a global food and food service industry specializing in business development, system optimization, and executive team management, according to a company news release. Pulaski has a proven track record of leading international market growth strategies in large global organizations such as J.M. Smucker, where he progressed over more than 16 years in a variety of leadership positions, culminating with a post as Vice President of International, driving logistical efficiencies, market access, and strategic partnerships. Most recently, he served as the President and CEO of Lipari Foods, a leading independent distributor where he was responsible for leading organic growth, expanding the company's national distribution, and designing operational strategy. Pricing has strengthened on lettuce supplies from the West Coast. The supply of romaine, red, and green leaf lettuces is out there, but due to the rains 2 to 3 weeks ago, the price hasn't been driven up, according to Jeffrey Ratto of Ratto Brothers Incorporated. He says they haven't seen prices rise on leaf lettuce for 6 to 8 months now. With those rains, some regions received hail as well, which in turn caused some lettuce damage as part of an overall quality decline. Supply is coming out of the Yuma, Arizona desert region. All these rains that they've had, especially in the desert and Northern California, will make spring a little more challenging. So the Northern California and Central Coast regions will probably start leaf lettuce later than usual, according to Ratto. It will be a couple of weeks, but it won't be the same as last year's transition. Last year, the region saw historical rainfall and some crops didn't see harvest until late May, when generally they start in mid-April. As for leaf lettuce demand, it's steady, even though the market has risen significantly in the past week. Complications with the weather are going to make it a bit more of a challenge going forward, he said. If there's not going to be a tremendous amount of demand, pricing will start to fall. He adds that growers in general are looking for some relief right now. Generally, markets are driven by unfortunate situations such as weather. However, because the market has been down for so long, everyone's probably breathing a bit of a sigh of relief and hoping to have the volume to sustain it to get back at it, according to Ratto. Depletion of groundwater in California's Central Valley for agriculture and other uses could be contributing to an increase in small earthquakes along the famed San Andreas Fault, according to a scientific study published recently. But the phenomenon is not believed to lead an increased risk of large earthquakes, according to Western Washington University geology professor Colin Amos, the study's lead author. The study, which came out in a journal Nature, focused especially on a heavily irrigated San Joaquin Valley, an agricultural region at the south end of the state's Central Valley. It looked at the previously studied rate of groundwater depletion for human use, which represents an amount of water roughly equal to Lake Tahoe, and a resulting sinking of lowland areas and a related rise in the height of mountains. The rise in the height of the mountains is estimated to amount to no more than half a foot, according to Amos, but the phenomenon puts more stress on the San Andreas Fault, which runs just to the west of the San Joaquin Valley, leading to an increased likelihood of small earthquakes, according to the study. These are small earthquakes we're dealing with, according to Amos. During a large earthquake, the change in stress that you'd see on the fault is much, much greater than the magnitude of the stress changes we're calculating as related to groundwater depletion, he said. The 810-mile San Andreas Fault runs roughly north to south through California. A study published in Nature in 2009 found tidal forces parallel to a segment of the fault in central California might be causing non-volcanic tremors. The faint tug of the sun and the moon on the fault was responsible for that, according to the study. The California Department of Food and Agriculture is working to help extend California's electric vehicle charging network. The work addresses a major challenge faced by EV owners, a still-developing network of commercial charging stations, including a need for them to be universally accessible through a series of plugs, adapters, and software applications that will allow EV drivers to recharge more widely and pay for the service on smart devices like phones and tablets. CDFA's Division of Measurement Standards worked with the EV industry leader Tesla to test and approve these advances, which are now operational on Tesla's network and allow for the charging of other manufacturers' vehicles on that network. Additionally, other charging station manufacturers and service providers may leverage a technology to help further in opening California's expanding charging network to all EV drivers. These measures are adding substantial capacity to the state and national charger infrastructure, which is essential for consumer acceptance and transition to EVs. The Division of Measurement Standards is committed to protecting fair commerce in California. The idea that consumers and other buyers of goods and services should always get what they pay for and that sellers must receive fair payment. The recent progress on EV charging stations is another important example of the division showing national leadership by staying current with rapidly developing technology in order to maintain equity in the marketplace.
Third and fourth generation rice producers Tom and Carter Knowles are carrying on the family tradition started by Tom's grandfather in the 1920s. Over the years, the various generations have continued to make improvements to the Butte County farm. In 2014, the father and son team began exploring direct marketing their medium grain Calrose type rice directly to consumers under the Chico Rice brand name. Thanks to a USDA value-added producers grant, they've been able to take that to a whole nother level with development of a formal marketing plan and a booth at the recent Winter Fancy Food Show in Las Vegas.
Our farming operation goes back to my grandfather, who came to Willows in the early 1920s, and he was a banker. He worked at Bank of Italy, which became the Bank of America. But he quickly got into buying land in the area. So he accumulated over his lifetime quite a bit of rice land in Glen and Colusa counties, a couple thousand acres. And he had five sons, my dad being the youngest of the five sons. And my dad took over the farming in the 1950s. And he developed a lot of the ground and got it leveled and brought into production. And I started farming with my dad around 1990 after I came back from trying my luck in the working world. And I decided to come back and work with my dad in 1990 and start a family. So I've been farming this land since then. Right now we're farming about 1,400 acres. And my son Carter, who's about 30 years old, he started working after he graduated from college in 2013. So now we're in that getting close to the transition of where I'm going to be turning all the operation over to him in the next 10 to 15 years.
Like many kids growing up on the farm, Carter Knowles said he had no intention of returning once he went off to college. After a few semesters at San Diego State University, he said he felt the call of the farm and ended up working there during school breaks. After graduation, he joined alongside his father full-time and has never looked back.
I don't think there's any way to really know what you're going to get when you're talking about kids and what they're going to want to do after they leave home and if they're going to want to come back. In my case, it was never my plan to farm. I went to San Diego State in 2009 and honestly wasn't really on my radar at the time. But as part of leaving home, that departure was really kind of what sort of presented the idea to me, funnily enough. I went to San Diego State, like I said, and it was very much culture shock, and I had a wonderful time there. I loved it there, but I immediately knew that that was not where I wanted to make my home. So my dad began to run the enterprise a little bit more aggressively than he had in the past and was taking a more hands-on approach. And so I decided while I was in college that I wanted to be involved in that effort. I started coming back during college, during the busy seasons to help out and fell in love with it. You know, it was never a plan for me. I just sort of fell into it. And if I had been sort of groomed to take on the farm, maybe I wouldn't have wanted to, you know, at a young age. Maybe my resolve to move away would have been stronger.
In the California rice industry, there are a few marketing options available to growers. They can either put their rice in a cooperative marketing pool, sell it for cash, or go through a marketing co-op. But Tom said they wanted to try to reap more value from their crop and decided to direct market it under the Chico Rice brand name. That also included purchasing a small mill so they could process their own rice crop. Processing involves removing the hard outer hull or husk. In the case of their blonde rice, it also means removing the outer bran layer. Brown rice, which still has the bran, is simply rice where the hull has been removed. Because they mill in small batches, Tom said customers have noticed a fresher taste of their product.
In the California rice industry, virtually everybody does go through one of the private mills or the co-op. And there's some marketing co-ops as well that people belong to. And I've always been interested in how we can do more. You know, even before we decided to do our own milling and do some branding, I was interested in, you know, keeping some rice and trying to sell it for cash, paddy rice for cash, kind of balancing that with participating in pools. From the marketing standpoint, we rice farmers, it's not very exciting. There's not a lot of options there. You can either hold out for cash. There's a few buyers that are out there paying the same price for cash. Or you can put it in the marketing pool and trust that you're going to get a decent price, a competitive price with what the other marketing pools are getting. And it usually evens out to everyone gets pretty much the same thing. And when times get tight, like they're getting right now, prices are getting down to the point where they're barely covering our costs of production. It becomes a lot more interesting to see if we can capture more value from our crop. And I think that's right after the last drought in the mid-teens is when I was thinking, you know, it's always my mantra, you know, how hard could it be? Maybe we can do our own milling and maybe get involved in marketing and creating a brand, which sounds like a lot of fun. That's kind of how we got started with it. I'm not into jumping in with both feet, so we decided just to find a small rice mill and see if we could mill some rice. And maybe it would be fun, maybe we'd learn something. And that's exactly what we did. We bought a miniature rice mill from a company in Brazil, and they shipped it to us in pieces. And it was quite comical, us trying to put that together with instructions in Portuguese and make the thing work. But we did it. And we put it together and started milling a little bit of rice for friends and family. It's just been a progression. That was in 2016, I think. And it's been a progression very slowly from there to where we are now, where we are actually selling in stores, have our own website on Amazon, and trying to really break into some larger stores here, hopefully in the next year, where we feel like we're on the cusp of becoming out there in the mainstream with the other rices you see on the shelves.
The widespread drought of 2022 hit the Knowleses particularly hard. Like many growers on the Sacramento Valley's west side, they essentially got no surface water and weren't able to grow any rice. Once they ran out of rice, Tom said they shut down and took the opportunity to undergo rebranding. A USDA grant helped them hire a marketing consultant who developed new package graphics, a new website, social media presence, and a formal business plan. When they got full water supplies back in 2023, they were able to produce a normal-sized rice crop and debuted the new look.
We had a very difficult year in 2022 due to the extreme drought that we had here, and we were only allocated something like 5% of our water supply. Really not enough water to grow any rice, and most of our part of the valley was completely left fallow that summer. And it pushed us into a situation where we didn't have enough rice to meet our customers' needs. And essentially, we shuttered our operation for several months in 2023 is when we ran out of rice. And we took that opportunity to hire a consultant to help us rebrand our website, all new graphics, new packaging, and also put together a marketing plan, which was a lot more sophisticated than anything we'd had before with social media, search engine optimization. And we also made plans to attend some food shows and get ourselves out in front of larger retailers and distributors. And so when we harvested our 2023 crop, which was much larger because we were able to get our water allocations back in 2023, we came out with our new packaging and introduced it to the retailers that had been waiting for our product to come back out, and our customers that have been waiting, and we've just kind of hit it with a big splash, and we're really starting to get some traction now with our new.
Tom and Carter also were able to attend the Winter Fancy Food Show in Las Vegas, thanks to the USDA grant. Carter said the event, with over 1,000 exhibitors, was unlike anything he had ever seen before. Both he and his father were heartened by the response they got from their rebranding, as well as the comments they got when attendees sampled their rice.
It was a wonderful experience. I'd never attended anything quite like that before. And it was wonderful. I mean, from the reception of our products to the reception of the rebrand, it was very, very encouraging, you know, because I just did not know what to expect at all. And we felt a little bit, at least unique, if not odd, in that crowd, because there are some amazing, amazing creators out there with really, really amazing products and with, you know, 50 different varieties out there on the shelves, amazing packaging, amazing, you know, that is art almost in its own right. All sorts of cheeses and sauces and nuts and snacks. Pretty complex arrays of all sorts of different products, and we're just there with our rice. And so we felt very homespun, but like I said, we were really encouraged because we were getting people stopping and looking at our bags and saying, this is beautiful. And then they would try our rice, and we were really, really happy with how their reaction to our rice. You know, we really try to connect our farm with the customer, and so it's always been special to be a part of that relationship with the person who's eating the rice right in front of you, because that's really what we're after.
Chico Rice is available online through Tom and Carter's website, www.chicorice.com. To find where Chico Rice is sold in a store near you, go to www.chicorice.com/pages/retail-stores. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
What is the connection between a nation's bio-based products industry and impacts to the U.S. economy? Some answers are provided via a recent USDA-commissioned economic impact analysis. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain has the story.
A recent USDA-commissioned economic impact analysis provided this finding.
$489 billion was added to the U.S. economy in 2021 through bio-based products contributions. That's $25 billion more than in 2020.
Rural Development's Rural Business Cooperative Service Administrator Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan says in addition,
the bio-based products industry supports 4 million jobs that impact every state, and so consequently, everyone in the nation.
The analysis also revealed oil displacement due to bio-based product production grew from 9.4 million barrels of oil equivalents in 2017 to 10.7 million barrels of oil equivalents 4 years later. The analysis release coincides with National Bio-Based Products Day. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Sign-up is continuing for the Dairy Margin Coverage Risk Management Program. John Burge is the Acting Deputy Administrator of Farm Programs for the Farm Service Agency, and he says the program is already paying out this year.
DMC sign-up for this year started on February 28th. It ends on April 29th, and payments started being issued. We had to adjust the regulation as a result of some actions by Congress. That adjustment is now done. The rule was published. And when that happened, one of the important pieces of that is it's retroactive back to January of 2024. And because those payments triggered for January of 2024, those payments started being issued again. But going forward now, people can elect into DMC coverage going up until April 29th.
It's open to any dairy operation in the country.
It's generally something that conventional dairies take advantage of. It's a risk management tool. It helps deal with some of those uncertainties that impact the prices for milk. Last year, we put out $1.2 billion in DMC payments. It's a really pretty cheap program. It costs about 15 cents per hundredweight for $9.50 coverage. That risk protection is just really inexpensive. So largely, this is conventional dairies that buy into this. And again, we put out quite a little bit of payments last year.
Burge says there are multiple coverage options.
There's several different options for coverage. You can go onto our website. There's an online dairy decision tool that's available there for people to do some homework before they go into the office and make a determination on what kind of coverage they would like. Producers have to certify with FSA that the operation is commercially marketing milk. There's a number of different forms that they would have available at their local county office, and then there's an administrative fee of $100. That fee is waived for farmers who are part of our either limited resource community, beginning farmers or socially disadvantaged farmers, or a military veteran.
Producers can lock into a multi-year contract or sign up every year. For more information, log on to fas.usda.gov. The House Agriculture Committee laid out a roadmap to relieve labor shortages that have seriously impacted America's farmers and ranchers. The Agriculture Labor Working Group released its final report on how to improve the H-2A guest worker program. It includes more than 20 recommendations to streamline the program and make labor more affordable for farmers. We're losing American farms rapidly, and there's no question a broken workforce system is partly to blame. That according to American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall. He says while the working group recommendations don't address all the labor challenges facing farmers, they do offer needed solutions such as streamlining the recruiting and hiring of H-2A employees. They also want to expand the H-2A program to meet year-round needs, recommend paying employees based on duties performed during the majority of the day, and reform wage calculation standards to provide stability in farm worker pay rates. The full committee report is available at agriculture.house.gov. Walmart has announced a planned opening of its third owned and operated milk processing facility in Robinson, Texas. The new facility is slated to open in 2026 and will create nearly 400 new jobs in the Robinson community, according to Walmart. The new facility will allow Walmart to meet the growing demand from customers for high-quality milk while providing transparency about where its products are sourced and making the supply chain more resilient, according to Walmart. The facility will process and bottle a variety of milk options, including gallon, half-gallon, whole 2%, 1% skim, and 1% chocolate milk for Walmart's Great Value and Sam's Club members' marked brands.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.